Welcome back. It's a Thursday, the 17th day of August, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And today, if you look at the news, folks, just about everything we see is a continuation of things we've been seeing for quite a while that really all point in the same direction, right down the toilet. But what's interesting is there are so many of them that provide some new insight into exactly what that flush looks like. And for that reason, let's start here. Would you believe the bodies in Maui haven't even been identified yet, but the climate propagandists are already pushing their agenda. Here's one story among many that indicates a climate change pushing propaganda book has been published on Amazon pretty much while the fires still raged. And although the fires continued until at least August 11th, says the coverage, a book chronicling, quote, the events of August 8th through 11th, 2023 was published on August the 10th. Kind of like with the Trump indictments, where they didn't even wait for the grand jury to actually vote, it looks like the climate change propagandists have jumped the gun, too. The book is titled Fire and Fury, the story of the 2023 Maui fire and its implications for climate change. Good grief. The description is full of the expected BS about how the book examines the causes and consequences of the fire and exposes the vulnerability of our society and our planet to the impacts of, yeah, man-made global warming. No, climate change, of course, is the new popular woke phrase. And it offers practical solutions and recommendations on how we can do better in the future, as long as Big Brother, of course, takes the lead. Now, here's the problem, and I've already alluded to it. For such an in-depth, highly researched, and highly touted book, isn't publishing a summary of the fires before the fires are even out just a little bit of a rush? And how do they do it so fast? Some of us that have dealt with the publishing industry know that it usually takes a bit longer, unless just maybe the skids have somehow been greased. It's already up on Amazon, even though the author, Dr. Miles Stones, doesn't have any actual history, but still they say breathlessly, this is a gripping and eye-opening account, and it says it reveals the urgent need to address the global climate crisis. It's a comprehensive and compelling narrative on the Maui fire, and interestingly, folks, that seems to contrast a bit with writing a narrative before they've even been allowed to come out. But if you're a bit skeptical and wonder just how damning this actually is, hey, where better than Snopes to realize, yeah, when the left is already spinning it, there's probably more smoke here than still ongoing fire. And to make that point, all you have to do is see how they set up a straw man and then debunk their own lies. Get this, fact check, they say. A book describing the Maui fires was published before they started. Question mark. Social media users claims it proves their conspiracy theories. And guess what? Since it's a lie up front, they rated their own mischaracterization false. And here we go. Quote, on August 8th, 2023, massive fire swept across the island of Maui, Hawaii, inspiring various conspiracy theories around the topic. Numerous social media users claimed that a book describing the fires was published before they happened, allegedly proving, that's a key word, isn't it, that the disaster was planned. Unquote, and come on, you morons. It doesn't prove anything, but it certainly ought to raise some eyebrows. And no, their own straw man is wrong. It wasn't published before the fires, although certainly it looks like the publication was started before the fires. It just merely adds, let me put it this way, a bit more fuel to the false flag fire. Here's a better story. This one comes from WeGotThisCovered.com. Charlotte Simmons is the byline. They too point to a number of things that just don't quite pass the smell test. And then add this. In case it isn't obvious by this point, there's a good to fair chance that even Dr. Miles Stones isn't a real person, given an impossibly fast publishing timeline that somehow transcends the laws of physics and a suspiciously and underwhelmingly crafted bibliography to boot. The most likely possibility, they say, and I would concur with this wholeheartedly, is that Fire and Fury and the rest of these books published under this name were coughed up by artificial intelligence. And that, folks, is precisely what your host thought when I first saw this thing to begin with. About the only explanation other than the conspiracy theory is it was done with some AI. And you can imagine the ChatGPT query, can't you? Write a book describing the politically correct reasons for the Maui fire. Feel free, of course, to make things up. But the author continues, The biggest takeaway from this is how disgusting the entire development is. Beyond the shady, heinous, and downright laughable practice that this mystery person is indulging in, the simple fact that they attempted to publish a cheap, faux account of a still ongoing disaster that's claimed an indefinite number of lives, the book won't even tell you how many there are because, at least allegedly, they can't know yet. All of this for the sake of a fast and probably insubstantial buck, and that's the only place I would disagree with the review, folks.
We got this cover, says it's bottom-of-the-barrel apathy.
But no, I can't help but suggest there's more to it. It's not about making a buck. Hey, any more than Skittles or Budweiser or Target is about making a buck. It's about pushing an agenda, and they're willing to sacrifice all kinds of bucks in order to make that happen. Because, guess what?
Selling products is no longer how the real money is made. In a communist world of ESG and government kickbacks, the narrative and the agenda drives everything else. And before we move on to other demonstrations of that, this story from the New York Post kind of brings the point home. Also from the It Stinks Worse Than a Fire in Maui follow-on files. The head of Maui's Emergency Management Agency asserted on Wednesday that he has no regrets about the massive failures that cost who knows how many their lives. The failure in this case to activate the warning sirens as the apocalyptic wildfires swept through the island, despite claims that the system could have saved hundreds of lives. Chief Herman Andaya defended his decision to only send out alerts via mobile devices, radio, and television, most of which, as you probably recall, went down shortly thereafter, and via the county's opt-in resident alert system after his experience and qualifications for the lofty position were called into question during a press conference held by the governor, who's arguably got problems of his own. Andaya claimed, says the piece, that the blaring sirens are basically reserved for tsunami warnings, and Hawaiians are trained to seek higher ground when they're set off, and they probably wouldn't have waited to find out what they were running from. By the way, folks, and we'll get to this in just a second, it may have turned out that the roads were blocked anyway, but yeah, that's another story. Probably related. Now, is he right that Hawaiians are so stupid they just run off half-cock without knowing which direction they were going? Or is it just possible that they might have actually decided, there's a siren going off, maybe before I panic, I better figure out what it's about and what I need to do? And again, on that score, I can't help but note, early stories said the information that they needed wasn't really going to be available to them anyway. Go figure. So I guess what they're claiming is the reason they didn't activate the warning sirens is because of the Darwin effect. And that, folks, also speaks volumes. One more late story at this point, courtesy of the Vigilant Fox Substack and Eyewitness Reports on Maui. A number of people have reported that the potable water being brought in by the government is, quote, making people ill for whatever reason. They're experiencing fevers, chills, other ailments from drinking potable water that's been left to them. One of them says, I got extremely sick from the potable water, 104 fevers, still ill, so be careful. Some reports are even saying the water isn't safe to be used after it's been boiled. So with all of that on the table, let's turn to one more story, this time from Connor O'Keefe via the Mises Institute, about the deadly conflagration. The most destructive natural disasters, he notes up front, are never 100% natural. Human choices, land use, government policies, all of them play a big role in just how harmful things like hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, flash floods, and yes, wildfires, if they're truly wild, are to the affected communities. And after catastrophes like the wildfire that destroyed much of the historic Hawaiian city of Lahaina last week, it's worth taking stock of just how much of the disaster was the result not of natural or accidental factors, especially not man-made global warming, but ponder the irony there too, but of policies and institutions that may have even made things worse. Yep, the details are still emerging. That doesn't prevent people from publishing books, pushing the official narrative, of course. It's becoming clear that government failure did a whole lot to make the disaster worse, and may have even started it. While the so-called experts are predictably blaming booga, 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 man-made climate change, in the process they're demanding the government grab even more power and authority, ostensibly to someday make the weather better. The destructiveness of this fire was the product of an all-powerful and all-incompetent regime. Yep, the specific origins of the fire, probably lots of them, folks, are still being investigated, but there is a lot we already know. For one, the city of Lahaina sits on the west coast of Maui, Hawaii's second largest island, and is surrounded by grassland, much of it owned by the state. And isn't that amazing? Not as much, I can't help but think, as they intend to end up owning. And nearly a decade ago, the Hawaiian Wildfire Management Organization, a research nonprofit, warned the government of the state that the area surrounding Lahaina was extremely fire-prone due to frequent downslope winds, steep terrain, and dry grass. But little was done to address these risks. And a subsequent report in 2020 added that an invasive species of exceptionally flammable grass was also prevalent in the surrounding fields, and that passing hurricanes, who could have thought it, generated strong winds known to fuel wildfires on the islands.
Well, folks, if nothing else, maybe the arsonists are reading those reports. Around sunrise, this report continues, a large fault was detected in the power grid, indicating a downed power line. And 20 minutes later, the first reports of fire came from the area around Lahaina Luna Road, uphill and upwind from the city. The area where the flames were first spotted is full of electrical infrastructure, mostly operated by the state's monopoly power grid supplier, Hawaiian Electric, including a substation and a multitude of power lines. Most of the land is owned by the state of Hawaii, except for a big parcel belonging to the estate of one of Hawaii's last princesses, which housed a solar farm supplying electricity to the Hawaiian Electric substation. And, notes the author, at least one glowing article has been published by NPR about the solar project, praising it as a direct result of government regulations crafted to transition Hawaii to 100% renewable by 2045. But on the morning of August 8th, as winds hammered the old wooden utility poles, the highly electrified area and the dry grasses above Lahaina was quickly becoming dangerous. Still, though, no formal procedure existed to shut off sections of the grid in the face of severe fire risks. And as a result, 29 fully energized poles fell across the western part of Maui on that day. But even with the downed poles on the way, the first firefighters on the scene met with early success. And as you know, around 9 a.m., the fire was declared 100% contained by the county's fire department. But the message to residents included what became an ominous request, because given that the county's water pumps were electric powered, much of which was frantically being turned off to deactivate downed power lines, officials asked the public to conserve water to preserve water pressure. Turns out, of course, a lot of them might have liked to have had that water to fight the fires. But by mid-afternoon, a flare-up brought the fire back to life on the Lahaina Bypass, a major road heading straight into town, whereupon the flames moved swiftly into Lahaina at 4:46 p.m., just 1 minute after the county government finally sent out an alert to warn the population, which was largely without power by this time anyway, about the flare-up that had occurred over a full hour before. And to make matters worse, as you already know, county officials failed to activate the emergency sirens, leaving residents unaware of the danger bearing down on them. As firefighters finally ran into the community to try to save it, they found there was little to no water pressure in the hydrants, which quickly ran dry. And with a single backed-up highway leading out of the city, many residents of Lahaina simply had nowhere to go. Some, as you've no doubt heard, scrambled into the ocean to escape the smoke and flames, but in the end, many couldn't get out. And at least 99 people have already been confirmed dead at this writing. And how's that for an interesting disclaimer by an actual author, making this the deadliest wildfire in American history in over a century. In addition, over 2,200 buildings were destroyed, with property damages between $5 to $6 billion estimated so far. Which brings me to the summary, and listen to this. To review, he says, a power company shielded from competition by the state placed electrical infrastructure among highly flammable state-owned grass fields above the historic city of Lahaina, which the government was twice warned were highly susceptible to fire. And once that fire broke out, a combination of defective water infrastructure, terrible communication by government officials, and only one escape route doomed the people of Lahaina to the worst wildfire experienced in this country in over 100 years. It was, in fact, government failure from one end to the other, through and through. And I'll add this to the author's comments about command economies and lack of accountability. If what we've seen from leftist governments over the last few years is any guide, and we know it is, don't expect any of the guilty to be held to account here either. Or for that matter, don't expect the actual truth even to come out. Especially if the truth turns out to be that it goes far beyond mere incompetence. While we're on the subject of is it mere incompetence or outright malice, this report out of TheBlaze.com and the People's Republic of Quebec, where the commission that monitors the practice of state-administered euthanasia, oh yeah, they'll kill you too up there, sent out a memo early this month reminding doctors, sick, that they're only to help exterminate human beings who satisfy the Canadian province's criteria for killing them, for so-called medical assistance in dying. Seems like in some places, folks, it's not medical assistance in dying that they're going to get. Anyway, this reminder was apparently necessary, says the Blaze, because some doctors have reportedly, who can imagine such a thing, flouted the rules and euthanized individuals who wouldn't or couldn't consent, along with patients who were ineligible for other various and sundry reasons. Last year, listen to this, there were nearly 5,000 cases of doctor-assisted suicides in Quebec, which has been touted as the world's euthanasia capital. Oh, and you know what? That doesn't even include those who were assisted in suicide with a voluntary or maybe not so voluntary Zyklon B injection. Some would call it the poison poke or even the not vaccine, but you know what we're talking about. And the captive Canadian state-owned media has indicated that by year's end, an estimated 7% of all deaths in Quebec will have been the result of doctor-assisted suicide. And if you add in death by lethal vaccine, you can imagine the number's a lot higher than that. All right, on then to other folks that they're trying to neutralize or kill, or all of the above. This piece comes from the Epoch Times, where the author of the piece sat down with military historian and columnist Victor Davis Hanson to get his take on the latest in a series of bogus indictments against former president, and some of us might add, actually elected president, Donald Trump, who asked this important question. Do you know any figure in American criminal history that's been the subject of four simultaneous indictments in four different jurisdictions in four different states? I don't, he said. No mafia figure, no mass murderer. So it's a coordinated effort to destroy him, said Victor Davis Hanson. And he added, that's the irony of this whole mess. They're prosecuting Donald Trump for election interference, and they're interfering in a way that's never happened before in American history. With the 2024 election, they're going after the leading candidate and trying to emasculate him and neuter him and essentially deny people a choice. They have a choice whether to vote for him or not vote for him, or at least they should have, but not if he's in jail. And that seems to be the aim here. Hanson argues that charging President Trump on the basis of election interference is, and I'd say this is kind of obvious, isn't it, an attack on the First Amendment. And clearly it sets a dangerous precedent. Quote, Al Gore challenged the 2000 election, he said, after it had been basically certified. Remember that, folks? Well, you're not supposed to. In 2004, Barbara Boxer and 32 Democrats tried to stop the certification of electors in Ohio. And then, of course, in 2016, we had Hollywood celebrities coordinated to go on television and beg the electors to renounce their constitutional duties. Remember that? Isn't it amazing, folks, how when the left does this, it doesn't even merit inclusion in the Ministry of Truth look back at history? Anyway, they went on TV, begged electors to renounce their constitutional duties, and vote against the popular vote count in their particular state, said Mr. Hanson. And all of that, according to Jack Smith or Fannie Willis, is racketeering now, or conspiracy, to deny the American people their actual vote, or to try to disrupt the election process, say the criminals who are actually disrupting the election process. And, he continued, were, quote, weaponizing every aspect of the First Amendment. Unquote. And this goes way beyond not only hypocrisy, but criminality. And I guess when it's successful, you don't dare call it treason. This is Newt Gingrich appearing on Fox News and giving what I would suggest is one of the most succinct two-minute summaries of the level of criminality and just what it means that you'll see.
I think what you're seeing tonight is one tree in a forest. And I think we are drifting towards the greatest constitutional crisis since the 1850s and the rise of secession and the Civil War. I don't mean that as hyperbole. If you read Andy McCarthy's remarkable book, Ball of Collusion, which came out in 2019, he makes very clear that it is Barack Obama who corrupts the Justice Department. It is Hillary Clinton who routinely breaks the law and gets away with it. And now we have Joe Biden who's learned. He's learned from Obama that doesn't matter what you do, if you're a liberal Democrat, you will not be prosecuted. He learned from Hillary that a person in high public office can get millions and millions of dollars. And they learned from watching Donald Trump that a true outsider willing to take on the entire system could destroy their entire machine. So what you're seeing across the country is a desperate last-ditch effort by a corrupt machine to destroy their most dangerous opponent in a way which not only breaks the Constitution, destroys the rule of law, and establishes a moment of bitterness which I think will last for a generation or more. I think this is going to be a horrendous period, and we just need to understand. The people who want to control America and dictate to the rest of us will break any law, lie about any topic, and manipulate the system any way they can, and that includes a lot of the elite news media.
Which leads me finally to another summary piece, this time courtesy of Mike Adams in Natural News. Can you feel it, he asks. 10 signs that Americans have finally, at long last, or have we really, reached a breaking point. You can see it in the crazy plane lady video, he says. He links that one. The flash mob shoplifting footage caught on cameras. The suicide numbers. The mental illness episodes that increasingly flicker across our screens. As I was reading this, I couldn't help but hearken back to a science fiction story written by Robert Anson Heinlein back in the 1950s that had a title something to the effect of The Crazy Years, where a man literally went around documenting cases of people doing things that would have been unbelievable. And in hindsight, some of the things he wrote in that piece were almost tame compared to the stuff we see every day now. But what follows, says Adams, are 10 examples of things happening in America that indicate a breaking point has been reached, beyond which we can only expect chaos and insanity, as if we weren't getting used to that, to prevail. Perhaps that's the plan, he says. In fact, so is the illegitimate election rigging by the tyrants in charge who used the last declared emergency to rig the election and destroy the economy, and no doubt they'll declare another one soon and use those emergency powers to oppress dissent and shore up their already illegitimate power. Well, here you go. Here are the 10 signs that the American people have already reached a breaking point. And number one is obvious. We've already been talking about it. The lawless Democrats that are drunk with power and making a mockery of the rule of law in their desperate attempts to stop any opposition to their senile, insanely evil, absolutely corrupt, and everybody knows it, so-called candidate that can't even tell when his own diapers need changing. So instead, they charge Trump with made-up crimes and ignore rampant bribery and all kinds of other criminality of those running the railroad. Never mind that Democrats have denied election results more than 150 times in recent memory, certainly without being criminally charged, before Trump was indicted, because he obviously isn't part of the club, for the very same thing. Number two, America's cities are collapsing into violence, mental illness, shoplifting, and ruin. Hey, tell me something we don't know. Number three, the corporations are going insane with their virtue signaling. They're pandering to ESG. Things like Skittles and their candy proclaiming black trans lives matter, certainly more than the Constitution, the rule of law, or your kids' lives. Or Target promoting their genital mutilation swimsuits for kiddies. Number four, I'd say this one's pretty obvious too. More and more Americans are waking up to the Biden regime's theft by inflation caused by the never-ending money printing and, of course, the attempt to destroy everything that isn't nailed down, either with the follow-ons to the Zyklon B or the war that never ends and, well, I won't say never ends, could end with that nuclear first strike they've been jonesing for. But if they don't get that, they will get the end of the almighty dollar, and that may destroy even more than a nuclear blast. Number five, he says, it's now obvious the 2020 election was stolen. The Biden regime completely ignores whatever court rulings they don't like, and they make up rulings and charges and crimes for anything that runs afoul of their attempt to keep the coup in place. Number six, false flag operations are being run against the American people, and they're getting increasingly sloppy and obvious, like the most recent fires in Maui. Number seven, pedophilia is being fully embraced by the communists, the far left, and even the rhinos that aid and abet them. Number eight, the climate cult has expanded into globally shared mental illness, while brainwashed people imagine the planet being destroyed unless they exterminate billions of other humans in order to stop their activity, like feeding themselves, breathing, and living. Number nine, and thank you, Tony Fauci and Dr. Mengele, the deployment and development of depopulation bioweapons continues to be funded by Big Brother U.S. government, with near zero efforts by any member of Congress to actually defund the mad science experiments. And finally, number 10, it's becoming undeniable that the USA, NATO, and Ukraine have lost the war with Russia, and God only knows what that means they'll pull off next. The rest of us, though, especially if we read Scripture, can pretty well guess it at this point, or at least fill in the gaps and connect the dots. So with that, I'll say thanks for being with us today. Pay attention, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.